Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What is good, everybody? Welcome in. It's episode number 42 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. My name is Ben Heisler. I am grateful to have you all with us today. Mina Kimes from ESPN is our guest on today's show. She's a senior writer over at ESPN and ESPN.com. Along with ESPN the magazine, she, of course, is on numerous ESPN shows and her podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, over on the Lebatard and Friends Network, is an absolute must-listen if you want to become a smarter NFL fan. And I've listened and I've really enjoyed it. Consider her to be one of ESPN's most thoughtful and unique personalities. So this was a lot of fun for me personally as well, and I think you guys will really enjoy our conversation. Covered a variety of topics, and one of them I'll get to in a second, because that was the main reason that I wanted to reach out. We've actually tried to have Mina on the show before. The timing just didn't work out. I think she was speaking over at the Sloan Analytics Conference, but news came out earlier this week that she will become one of the LA Rams preseason analysts in the booth for the four games of the preseason. And immediately I was fascinated. I wanted to hear and I wanted to learn more. Just, this is a really exciting, unique opportunity. I remember when we had Andrea Kramer on right after the Amazon opportunity for Thursday Night Football. The more we start to have some different voices and different perspectives compared to the traditional play-by-play and color analyst, I think is good for football, and I think it's good for football fans. You might have heard me discuss this several months ago during the StatCast broadcast for Major League Baseball, and it was just so refreshing to have a different choice. I know ESPN, not people don't always love this, but for the college football championship game, where you have like four different ways to view and soak up the game, whether you want the traditional broadcast with Fowler and Herbstreit, if you want the coach's room, or hanging out with a bunch of different writers at ESPN and different personalities, watching live with Lebatard. Like, there's all these different ways that you can help enhance a broadcast, especially when you're a media entity and you're growing. And I think Mina's going to provide some really cool perspective for the Rams this preseason. And I think this is good, ultimately, for football and for football fans. So we got into her initial conversations and discussions about the gig and what she's most looking forward to. I was curious who she's admired and learned from within broadcasting, particularly on the color commentary side, because this is something that she's going to be doing for the next month. And of course, she's got a really unique story and perspective in coming to ESPN from the business and investigative journalism world. So we covered a lot, still had a lot of fun, especially towards the end. A bunch of fun quick hitters that I think you guys will really enjoy. Before we get to Mina, if you enjoy the podcast, please take a second or two, head on over to Apple Podcast and rate and review the show. There's a lot of early reviews. They're like from, I don't know, 2012, 2013, maybe, when I wasn't here, but the audio quality wasn't good. It's a lot better now. It's been much better for the last several years, and these ratings help other people find the show. So please take a second, if you enjoy it, to rate and review the show. And if you don't like it, we'll read your review as well and try and get better. Please also follow us on Twitter, at Awful Announcing. If you'd like to follow me, you can do so at Benny Heiss. And head on over to awfulannouncing.com for the very latest in sports and sports media. We really are just truly lucky to have so many very talented and creative writers. So please go support their work over at awfulannouncing.com. She's a senior writer over at ESPN.com, a panelist on Around the Horn, a frequent co-host on High Noon, highly questionable on The Dan Lebatard Show. She is also the host of The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, and now the new color analyst for the Los Angeles Rams this preseason. Mina Kimes, our guest on the Awful Announcing Podcast. Hi, Mina.
Hi.
Congrats on the new opportunity to be in the booth with the Rams. Is the next step for you going to be a head coaching opportunity, since you're now going to have an association with Sean McVay?
I assume so. That's how it works, right? I don't even know. I think I had to get this close. I just had to interview him once, and then I'd be in consideration.
I think as long as it's sort of, if you're near Sean McVay, like, next time we talk, you could be a head coach in the NFL. This is very exciting.
I can't wait to be in his tree.
You're based in Los Angeles, so I know that this is an opportunity to be working with a hometown team. I know where you grew up, though, was obviously not in Los Angeles, but how did these discussions first begin, and who initiated them?
So the Rams reached out to me. Kevin Demoff at the Rams that specifically did. I had met him a few years ago doing, I've moderated a couple panels at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytic Conference. I think I got that right. on football, and he's been on those panels the last 2 years and have gotten to know him a little bit, had some good conversations with him. We both follow the Washington Huskies. The Rams drafted a couple Huskies this year. I told him I was excited about those picks, and then he reached out with the suggestion.
And then after the conversations kept going, I know you'd said to Sports Illustrated that the idea of even being a football analyst in the booth didn't really occur to you because nobody really in that position had looked like you or talked like you. And it's interesting, we had Andrea Kramer on this podcast back when she first became a part of the Thursday night team with Hannah Storm, and she said something similar. And I think it's so fascinating, like, this, despite the stellar career of covering the league that she had and then you've had for several years, does it surprise you that, I guess, even today we're still looking for more of a diverse representation in sports media, really across all platforms?
You know, I would say, in terms of sort of not envisioning this for myself, yes, part of it was not having seen people who look like me, but also just having come up as a writer. You know, this isn't something that a lot of writers end up doing. After joining ESPN, my career has changed a lot from going, you know, at the beginning I was only writing and I still write, but I've moved into different spaces over the years. And I think it's only as I've taken on more audio and television, radio, podcasting, et cetera, roles at ESPN, that something like this became fathomable.
In broadcasting, we all have early influences, and I would imagine that as you grew as a writer, you would sort of look initially at the people that first influenced you, and then once you would figure out a lot of your skills and your tone and your voice, you'd eventually start to separate and just write like Mina Kimes. So now, with this being your first time in the booth, who were football analysts that you've always enjoyed hearing and learning from, and how do you plan to sort of move away from their style and sort of develop your own style?
I don't know how much of a style I can define for myself in the preseason, so I feel a little overly ambitious to even be. It is kind of like, honestly, I do a lot of a draft analysis, and we do a draft Twitter show. I love the draft, and there's always pressure to come up with comps, right? And then you feel like a goober because you're comparing a sixth round quarterback, a quarterback taken in the sixth round, to like Ben Roethlisberger or Cam Newton or something. And that's what I feel like I'd be doing if I even offered a comp for you. But, you know, I'm a huge Collinsworth fan. Just throw that out there. I love his style. I like how, he's very smart. You know, he's always bringing kind of new approaches to information, I suppose, and prioritizing different ways of gathering that information. Every season you've kind of seen evolution with him. And as someone who also really, you know, as a writer and analyst, is always looking for new information as well. And I'm very much interested in the analytics space. I kind of hope to take the same approach.
Can we expect a slide in on your first Rams broadcast the way Collinsworth does?
If I tried that, I'm sure I would fall and humiliate myself.
Well, the other thing too about Chris Collinsworth is once he had the association, and you know, a lot of people already knew about Pro Football Focus and were well aware of a lot of the brilliant writers and personalities that they have there. But once that became part of a staple of NBC and their Sunday night broadcast and his association with them, immediately the understanding and the respect for Pro Football Focus started to shoot up too. So it's another opportunity to provide, within the context of analytics, a really solid platform that a lot of listeners can grow and take from. Because with football, I feel like even though people say they just want the action, they just want the game, people are so heavy for information. They want more of it. They want as much of it as it consume. It's all about how you present it, I think.
I couldn't agree more. And it's not just, I think sometimes when we talk about how analytics or, you know, I guess just newer approaches to looking at football might infiltrate a broadcast, it's not just dropping a number and saying, oh, well, this player has this grade, or look at EPA or DVOA or anything like that. It's how you look at the sport itself, right? Like a very hot topic right now amongst football nerd Twitter, we'll call it what it is the importance of the run game. And in my mind, that really factors into what's happening in the preseason. The Rams this year are playing the Cowboys, for example, and there's been a lot of conversation over whether or not that team should pay Ezekiel Elliott a lot of money. And I hope that if that's still, in the air when they're playing, I might get a chance to kind of talk about that issue with the sort of that information and that background in mind.
I think that's a fascinating element to football now, especially because you have such an old school and a new school mentality. And, you know, for my other job in the fantasy football space, we did a whole video breakdown talking about Melvin Gordon and his trade demands and whether or not they should consider it based on the money that he's asking for. It's all part of the growing evolution, too, especially with so many satellite backs. It's starting to become a part of the equation. There's very few workhorse backs that remain in the NFL. That's something we could probably talk about for another hour, but I know that your time is limited. Can we go back a little bit? I'm curious when you knew that you initially wanted to become a writer, and also when did you know that you had the ability to write well?
Oh my goodness. well, I've been writing for a long time. I did some journalism and studied English in college and interned at a magazine that no longer exists called Fortune Small Business, which is how I got into business journalism, which is where I got my start. Worked at Fortune Small Business, Fortune, Bloomberg News, and ESPN was actually my first job writing about sports when they hired me in, I believe, 2014.
Were you nervous about the change over into the sports field? I know that you've had a passion for sports, but as going into the sports field, writing on a professional level, did that scare you at all?
Yes. Yes, no question. In some ways, it wasn't a change at all. So at Bloomberg, I was an investigative reporter writing about companies. So going from, you know, being yelled at by corporate lawyers to being yelled at by agents is actually a little bit lower stress in some ways. But, anytime you switch fields, it's a little bit scary because you have to, while the tools are the same, and I'd say writing is the same and structuring a story is the same, the little ways in which you have to navigate the field are totally different. I had never been in a locker room. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't even know how you get into the locker room. So I had to learn a lot of those things on the fly when I switched over to working for ESPN.
Was there anybody in your corner initially at ESPN that could help you get through those initial stages? Was there anybody that you relied on in particular?
A ton of people. I mean, so I was hired by ESPN, the magazine. Megan Greenwell and Scott Burton hired me, and I got the writers there, most of whom are still there, just amazing writers like Kevin Van Valkenburg, Seth Wickersham, yeah, are two in the football space who have just been endlessly helpful and kind to me and continue to be wonderful resources.
The other component of that too is that when you go into the sports field on a full-time level, when you're covering the league that you once grew up loving and being a fan of, a lot of that time, the fandom that you once had and liked to cling on to can go away because, you know, you're starting to learn a little bit more about how the sausage is made. Was that a fear of yours as well, going into the sports space and knowing that you were a diehard Seattle Seahawks fan and you wrote about that, you know, the relationship that you had with the Seattle organizations and teams with your dad and with your parents? Did that worry you at all, knowing that you were going into a space and maybe the fandom would not remain the way that it once was?
You know, I think once I started working more as an analyst, right? Because at that point, I just had to pay less attention to Seattle. I think what people don't understand about analysis and teams is if you follow a team, you know more about that team than me, right? And I think you'll never know as much about every team as the people who follow that, the diehard fans out there. And once I started covering the NFL from a broader perspective, my attention has been different. The things I look at have changed. So I'm no longer, you know, waiting to see if what Seahawks practice squad is doing or what's happening in the preseason, alienating my followers by live tweeting those games. I think that's been sort of interesting. I've thought a lot about sort of the fandom thing and how you talk about that team or write about it in a way that's, I think, fair and honest and truthful. And I've always felt like, you know, you shouldn't be afraid to sort of share that passion, but you also have to bring criticism in equal parts. And I've tried to do that whenever I talk about Seattle.
I think it's a really interesting transition because it's clear and evident that you love football and you write about it and you cover it for ESPN and you're going to be an analyst in the booth. And I think you're right. A lot of fans don't always understand the perspective of you can love something, but you can also be very critical about it. Have you had a difficult time balancing the joy that comes with watching football with also this very uncomfortable nature of the violence that it brings both on and off the field?
Yeah, but that's I've felt that before I started working in sports. You know, like most football fans, I don't know about most, but like a lot of football fans, I've certainly paid attention to everything that had been happening in the NFL and around the NFL. You know, in the years before I joined ESPN, a lot of stuff started coming to light with regards to concussions, I think like 2010, right? Yeah. Or 2009.
Right around that time, yeah.
The questions you're asking are ones that I've asked myself separately from my job, you know? And when I started working at ESPN, it was 2014. Now I remember, because that was the year that the Ray Rice incident happened, and I was called on often to talk about that on our network and write about it as well. And as far as how it kind of affects my enjoyment of the game, it absolutely does. It's something I think about. All of those issues, I suppose, are things that I think about when I'm watching football, when I talk about football. I've just always tried to be really honest about them, while also, you know, I guess approaching the game with as much passion and excitement as ever. And I kind of feel like you can do both of those things at the same time.
I think you can too. And I guess to sort of stay on more of the on the field side, and we had this conversation last week when Mike Florio was on the show. I just wish that the NFL came with a little bit of transparency in all this. And maybe there's legal issues that come alongside with the fact that they continue to deny and move themselves as far away from the situation as possible when they're inherently involved. But I almost feel like there'd be some sort of element of people would at least be on the side of, okay, you're willing to admit your faults. You're willing to admit that the game is inherently unsafe, but we're telling you this in advance. If you decide to play in the NFL and have this become a part of your career, you inherently know the risks that you're taking. And I think a lot of us would say, okay, now that we know, we can at least feel a little bit better about it. Is that fair?
I think the NFL has gotten a lot closer to what you're describing in recent years, especially compared to what 2010 or 2009, as I described. But obviously, you're right. There's still a long way to go. And you know, I think it's incumbent upon us, the people who cover it, to always make sure that stays in the conversation.
You've written some fascinating pieces over at ESPN.com and in ESPN the magazine, and two that come to mind, especially with the start of football season, was you did a profile a few years ago on Aaron Rodgers. Most recently, you had a piece on Baker Mayfield. Both were terrific. You can find those on ESPN.com. And there's certainly more. You've done profiles on Von Miller and Antonio Brown, but the two quarterbacks in particular I was curious to discuss with you because they're very similar. I feel like a lot of them, they're misunderstood by fans. They're both fearless. They're risk takers. They both tend to have this improvisational skill on the field, but their personalities are also very different. You know, Baker will tell you straight up what he's thinking and doesn't really care how it's interpreted. And Aaron Rodgers for so many years was so guarded and cautious. What did you come away with after your visits with both of them?
I think you're right to say that they have very different personalities. I think what's striking when you think about those two quarterbacks in particular, I'm sure their personalities are different in large part because of just who they are and who they've always been based on spending time with them. I think that's true. But I also think it sort of reflects their age, or their age difference, rather. You know, Aaron's closer to my age. I think he's a year older than me. When I was with Baker, I think I was struck by that feeling that I was talking to someone who grew up at a very different moment from me, and I think from some older quarterbacks. You know, he is so unguarded in ways, and so he shares so much of himself, and he's so fearless about that. And I think that's, you know, it's very millennial. I guess I'm technically a millennial, but it's a very, I think it's very symbolic of the times, I suppose. And it feels different from what most quarterbacks sort of where they're coming from.
Do you think and maybe expect that as we see more of these newer generational quarterbacks come in, that we might see more in that type of personality, more fearless to be able to say what they want to say, as opposed to guys sort of, you talked about in the piece about how Baker doesn't like the idea of being this franchise quarterback, that the terminology of it said it didn't really fit in with his personality. Do you anticipate that as we continue on and the NFL goes through these new stages and new quarterbacks coming in, that those younger guys might take on more of this persona that's different from what we've seen in maybe in the last 10 years?
I do. I think so. And I think it's not just quarterbacks. I think it's players across the league. You know, some guys just have quieter personalities and they're introverts and just will never be that way. But I think undoubtedly, like you have seen a bit of a sea change in terms of players feeling, being, I guess, I suppose, a little bit more expressive, especially on their own social media.
I want to go lighter with some of these questions to close things out. And we can even go a little bit rapid fire on these as well. On your podcast, The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, for those that are unfamiliar with it and haven't had a chance to listen, Lenny is very much a big part of the podcast. He's your dog, and he's asked questions, and he's integrated within the show. But there's this very distinct voice for Lenny, and I'm wondering how you concocted it. Is it how you believe he sounds or how you want him to sound?
It is, it's only one question that he gets, but it still manages to humiliate me every time. It's the voice that I use when I am talking on his behalf, that I would, when I would be talking to a friend or my husband or someone, and there's no way, as I thought when I started explaining this that it would sound more rational, but as I get it's like worse and worse, it's his voice.
Okay. Fair enough. So it's not, this is how I want Lenny to sound. This is how I believe Lenny sounds in me, and I'm just projecting.
Exactly. It's probably not accurate because he's actually from Alabama, but I'm thankfully I'm not attempting a southern accent.
Yeah, the southern sounding dog is a little bit tricky to play with, and it's weird. I've seen videos of Lenny calling in a Feinbaum, and it's very strange. But that's a conversation for another time. What's something about being in the studios at the Clevelander over in Miami when you're there for Highly Questionable or the Dan Le Batard show? It seems like a very unique studio and setup. What's something about it that most of us really wouldn't know?
It's tiny. It's like very close quarters. I think. Which creates, it sort of amps up the environment because everyone's just bouncing off of each other, you know, and that's very different from a lot of the other studios that I'm in, but it makes it a very unique place.
Shohei Ohtani became a Los Angeles Angel moments before you went on Around the Horn. How long did it take you to recover from that? Because that video still makes its way around and I still get a good kick out of it.
You know, it's so referring. Yeah, I think I screamed no or something because I thought the Mariners were going to get him. And it didn't take me long to recover from that because I was instantly reminded, oh, right, these are the Mariners. You've been miserable for 15, 20 years. Why you were stupid, Mina, to think that anything was going to change.
So I would imagine watching them this year, there's been like zero fun, or is it just sort of like there's times where you can be a fan of a team if they're really, really bad. I think a bad fun association can happen with a team. When they're bad and it's just frustrating, then that's not there. But I feel like the Mariners are kind of bad fun this year. And they have a couple guys that are really intriguing in Vogelbach and such. Like, has it been awful to be a Mariners fan this year, or is it just kind of fun?
No, I think they're bad fun, and they're finally ripping the Band-Aid, which is, you know, something that they haven't done yet. They're going all in on being bad, and I appreciate it.
What's the strangest thing that you've ever chosen to Etch-A-Sketch?
Oh, man. I think LeBron as a possum carrying a bunch of baby possums on his back.
What was the inspiration behind that?
I think somebody gave me the idea. I used to put out, you know, I haven't done that in a while, but I think I put out a request for ideas and someone suggested that.
Can I make a suggestion? Not necessarily for Etch-A-Sketch, but you're now going to have this great opportunity in the booth to play around with the Telestrator. Best idea for the Telestrator, you get an opportunity to draw at some point.
Oh, man, I don't think anyone wants to see that.
No? Okay. Well, maybe it's just one of us. You're a Bachelor and Bachelorette fan. What did you make of this year's finale of The Bachelorette?
Oh, an excellent season. And actually, there's a Rams connection. So the guy who, he didn't win, but he really won, Tyler.
Yes.
Was a Wake Forest quarterback. And the Rams, one of their backup quarterbacks, is a Wake Forest guy. And I look forward to asking, it's John Wolford. He was actually the best quarterback in the AAU, which, being a football weirdo, I did watch. I'm excited to ask him if he knew Tyler.
Yeah, I think it'll be a really interesting conversation. I've watched the show for a long time. This was one of the first seasons since Ben Flanjek's season that I didn't watch. And initially, I couldn't get behind rooting for Hannah. I was not a fan of hers in the initial Bachelor season. And then once I started to catch up a little bit, I realized that I made a genuine mistake, that she ended up being a great Bachelorette.
She was excellent.
So that surprised me right off the bat, and she ended up turning me from a doubter into a believer. You have a great DMX impression. It's been on display on the Dan Le Batard Show. Are there any other impressions that you have in your back pocket that we don't know about?
Oh, man. I've been trying to work on a Pablo Torre impression, and it's just not cutting it. And I practiced it. I send Mike Ryan, who produces the Le Batard Show, I've sent audio files of me trying to do it. Basically, all my impressions are just the same impression, which is DMX, but it's also kind of Cookie Monster, and it's also kind of Yoda, and I can't really do anything other than that.
By the way, you mentioned Pablo Torre on this podcast. Back when High Noon first started, he claims to be an exceptional karaoke performer. Can you confirm or deny this?
I have not seen him do it, but given his heritage and the fact that Pablo is good at a lot of things, I absolutely believe it.
Okay. Are you a karaoke performer at all?
No, I'm the worst singer in the world.
Okay, fair enough. Diana Rossini, friend, enemy, or frenemy?
She's a friend. She cracks me up. She also terrifies me.
And then last one that I have for you. Give me a non-obvious Super Bowl contender. I know you talk about it on the most recent episode of the Mina Kimes Show. I haven't had a chance to listen to it with Warren Sharp yet, some of your dark horse candidates. But is there a non-obvious Super Bowl contender that I can maybe get some good betting value on before the start of the season?
So my pick is the Eagles, but the dark horse that I like coming out, you know, I would probably take an AFC dark horse just because I think it's a bit softer than the NFC, but I actually really like the Panthers, and you can get great odds there. I'm much higher on them, I think, than most people. I haven't seen the Packers odds too, but I also like them as a sort of unconventional favorite.
I think the Packers are really interesting. I'm hoping that the Bears are able to pull it together. That's my team. And Carolina, I really liked as well last year. I think at one point they were 6-2 before falling apart towards the end. And I think you could get them, you know, Super Bowl odds at like 30-1 or 35-1. They let me down.
This year they're higher than that. And Cam Newton was excellent at the beginning of last season. Really liked that front seven.
Yeah, and Curtis Samuel, by the way, a guy that I think is going to have a really nice season from a fantasy level. But again, a conversation for another time. Make sure you guys are following Mina as well on Twitter, at Mina Kimes. Check her out over in the Rams broadcast booth, where she's going to be able to be a preseason analyst for them. And of course, she's all over ESPN and on ESPN.com. I appreciate the time. I'm a fan of your work, and hopefully we can do this again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.